Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, yeah, it's Friday. It's summer. And it's time to get together with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine, as we do first hour once a week on this day of the week. Michael, how are you, sir?
I am great. How are you, Todd?
I'm so excited.
What are you excited about?
There's just so much to discern and talk about and rip apart and analyze and figure out. There's, you know, that Rahm Emanuel line about how, what an opportunity is when there's a crisis and you don't want to waste it.
You don't want to waste.
Well, we are surrounded by crises. They're all around us.
I know.
So we can just pick and choose which ones we want to not waste.
What do we have? Let's first, before we pick and choose, let's decide, you know, what we have to choose from. I mean, let's not waste a good crisis on a Friday. Mm-hmm. We have the economy is in crisis. We have a pandemic, which is a crisis. I'm not so sure that the Black Lives Matter movement is a crisis. It actually could be an awakening or a reckoning. It could be a good thing.
Well, it depends on what you mean when you say Black Lives Matter. Well, that's the point. It all can be a good thing.
Exactly. Did you just disappear on me? Are you there?
I don't know.
Okay, I hear you now. I just wasn't sure. I'm just playing with my dials.
You having trouble with your little demons in the internet?
Yeah, I think we have a couple of demons working with us right now. Talk to me. Let me hear what you sound like.
All right, so we've got all these things going on in each one. Yeah, so the economy is a big deal. The COVID crisis is the Democrats' favorite. That's the one they like for being able to change election laws and things like that that they hope they can make permanent, and they probably will. So I think there's a little something for everybody in there.
Right.
I'm particularly excited about this. I wouldn't call it the Black Lives Matter moment so much as the George Floyd moment, that we had such a vivid and despicable act captured completely on videotape. So you can just sit there and watch every second of the torture and come to terms with something that a lot of people have not been able to come to terms with.
Well, I mean, what does coming to terms mean? What does it mean? What is it? What is an individual person supposed to do? Are you, change your ways, change your perception? Is there anything that you really don't know from all of this?
Oh, yeah. I feel very differently about things since that video happened, because it's created this moment, this explosive moment where people who refused to understand, who hadn't seen enough evidence. I mean, imagine that killing of George Floyd and what would have happened if all you had was witnesses to go on and not a video to become an instantaneous national thing. And if you didn't have social media to spread it instantly. And how would that have, you know, all the usual defenses, I think, for police always work because the system is so rigged to make sure police never get fired that it takes something incredibly explosive like that videotape and the act that was captured on it. So I feel like this is a big moment.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. You know, it's interesting. The video cameras that are all over the place, everybody now is armed with a camera. I guess this surveillance that our society is under is going to keep us all honest. It also keeps us all under surveillance. Obviously, in the case of the George Floyd travesty, it served a very good purpose. I look at it from a bigger perspective. I don't just see it as a police versus African-American issue. I see it as a police versus society issue. And we have to come to grips with the fact that most police officers are very brave, dedicated servants. And I think it's grossly unfair to paint the entire police force of America with a broad brush that they're all out of control. But who
does that and what does that?
Well, some people do that. But that aside, the police is a very powerful concept that has to be watched very carefully. Police, they're armed representatives of the state in a paramilitary organization. And as a result, on one level, we can't live without them, but they have to constantly be watched. And the thing that I get out of all of this is that it's time for the police to start being very critical and scrutinize their own behavior. In other words, the police have got to begin policing themselves. The whole thing with the police unions, the whole thing about the brotherhood and that they never turn on each other and they always have each other's backs. I understand how that happens, but that's the problem. The problem is the police are not being policed, because the police are, as good as they may be and as brave as they may be, and all the things that we hear, you know, sometimes we go through moods in this country, we talk about the police, you know, first responders, these are the heroes and all that. Right now, you know, they're not enjoying that at all because of the actions of some. But the police are a dangerous concept that must be watched carefully. Not just in how they deal with African-Americans, but how they deal with everybody. And don't forget, there are a lot of African-Americans on the police force. This is a far more complicated subject than many people would have you believe in terms of, you know, what you hear and what you see. But no, what you're saying is well taken. But I just think that I think there's a lot more to it. I think surveillance is an interesting aspect of it. And just the general awesome power and danger of unrestrained, unmonitored dishonesty among police is a very frightening thing. And I think that's what we really have to come away from with this and not go into some type of a state of mind where we actually believe there's deep-seated hatred between the factions of our country. I think for the most part, Americans get along very well.
So this is, I feel the same way. My concern about bad cops being protected by bad unions is that that hurts the good cops, who are totally the vast majority, I assume. So yeah. Who wants to work in an organization where you and the vast majority of your coworkers are doing a great job every day and performing with integrity and dignity? And then when the screw up, you know, look at it in our business, the guy who wires the microphone, so you get a shot every time you get a shock every time you get near the microphone. If those people were the ones who were being protected, the worst people in the organization are always being fought to the death to save by this third party special interest group that's empowered by the state and empowered by your coworkers, and then you become a victim of it. That's a horrible thing. And the whole society is now being victimized by the fact that some dope went and created these extra constitutional and unfair, unreasonable third-party special interest groups who have a pseudo-governmental role. It's horrific.
I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about when you're talking about these third parties. What do you mean?
The police unions. These
oh, okay,
are special
the unions.
Interest groups.
All right, I understand. Yeah, well, I mean, it's in this case, the police unions seem very different than the unions that deal with the average worker. It's a whole different animal. And I think we're all.
Are you talking about private sector worker? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. The police union.
Yes. But on the government side of things, it's not just the police union, because we've been hearing this for decades on the education side. that you can't change education policy, that there's a room in New York where all the teachers they won't let in the classroom go to sit and waste the day so they can get paid every day. You know, all these things that are absolutely cancers upon an organization, as anybody who's ever run an organization knows, as soon as a drop of defending a lack of integrity becomes part of your system, you've got a big problem with your system.
No question about it. So hopefully that's the message, and hopefully that'll be the lesson that comes out of all of this. But I don't know. I just believe most people are of goodwill, and I think that most people do not walk around with hate in their heart. I think that
I agree. That makes it all the more horrible. Mm-hmm. We've got these wonderful people, and as soon as they step inside this system, they become protectors of the system because there's such pressure on them to behave in a way that goes against their own internal sense of right and wrong.
Mm. And we as human beings tend to do that. We tend to run with our pack. We tend to buy into the morality of the organization. We do that in corporate life. We do that with our jobs. We buy into things that really thought about, if we were educated differently, we would never go along with. But because the people around us do it, and because it's expected of us, and there's so many different kinds of pressure on us, we go along with things that at another time in our life we might say, how did I ever do that? How did I not see just how inherently corrupt that was?
Yeah.
And I guess so. If that's the case, then this is a good time. This is a good time. We're reevaluating our principles. We're reevaluating our notions, our biases, that can only ultimately, if we are of goodwill, that could ultimately only cause for a better society. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Well, hopefully there are debates going on. Which debate is supposed to be debated, and some people want it to go in this direction and some people want it to go in that direction, and people always find political solutions that minimize the need for change so that they don't have to change the people in power. So there is a lot to figure out on it. Michael Harrison is here. Stay with us on WTIC. WTIC. Michael Harrison is here. We talk about big issues and small ones, relevant ones and irrelevant ones. I'm not sure which I like best. I like them all, I guess. It's summertime, Michael. It's getting to be sweaty season. Are you somebody who shrivels up from the heat and begs for cold, or vice versa?
I don't like any extreme in temperature. I don't like when it gets really cold. And I sound like Goldilocks. I don't. I like that Goldilocks zone. I like a beautiful day in September or a beautiful day in April. 90 degree weather and humidity is not my idea of fun. But then again, those cold, bitter, New England days that we have can really chill your bones. So,
yeah.
I like it. I could deal with anything. You know, we have heaters and we have air conditioners and we have all these things to make ourselves comfortable. But if I had to be in cold weather all the time or hot weather all the time, I don't know if I'd be happy with either. What about you?
Well, see, it's funny you say that because I tend to think of this being a binary thing. Like, I was walking with my grandson this week. I do a regular thing with him where we talk. He wants to know all the stuff, how it works, the things I talk about on the radio. He's a very curious 12-year-old and loves learning how the political system works and how devious and ugly I portray it to be. He finds that fascinating. And he said, it was a nice day. It was like, 75 degrees, 78 degrees, a little bit humid, intense summer sunshine, just a gorgeous day. And we're walking around a park, and he wanted to walk under the trees because he was too hot. And I was a little surprised. But then I remembered that he likes snow, and he was mad. He's been mad the last couple of winters that there wasn't more snow. And I thought, okay, so he's a hot, a cold weather person. He hates the heat. And I've always thought that you were either one or the other. Now you've just blown up all my assumptions.
No, extremes, you know. Now, one of the things I've noticed as I've gotten older over the years, as we all do over the years get older, is that I was far more tolerant. Not even tolerant. I even enjoyed extreme weather more when I was a kid, when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Hot times, you know, in the summer, hot town summer in the city, the beach, and, you know, we used to all lie out in the sun as though that were healthy. And never bothered me. And I have tremendous memories and a lot of old home movies of myself as a kid on the sled, going down the hills, building snowball fights, you know, all that stuff. It never occurred to me when I was playing in the snow or I was playing in the heat that the temperature was extreme. As I got older, I started to find myself, just less tolerant. I don't know what causes that, but it definitely is a thing of age. So I don't think kids are as negatively impacted by the extreme temperatures as we are as we get older.
No, but the thing with Nikki was he's clearly loves the cold and has low tolerance for the heat, which I consider to be the norm. So I've not heard somebody say what you just said, that you don't like either extreme, which makes perfect sense now that you say it, because why would we like the extremes? But there's just, for me, there's something so glorious about the warm weather. And we wait in New England so long for it to show up, and it stays for such a short time that I feel like it's precious.
Okay, well, I agree with that, but I find the thing that's even more precious and more rare are those beautiful days in the fall when the leaves are just right and the temperature is just right. And the same could be said, the mirror image of it, in spring. Most of the spring and most of the fall is either too hot or too cold. I find that middle ground, and maybe this is my imagination, I mean, simple research would answer the question, but in the Northeast, I find that the extreme part of the year seems longer now than those beautiful days you get in the two seasons that are between the extremes of summer and the extremes of winter. And that, you know, the whole notion of the beautiful autumn, the leaf peeping, the, you know, all the things that come with being in New England in the autumn, and, you know, spring, those first days of baseball, if we ever get back to that, the smell of grass, the daisies popping up, flowers, bees, all that, the smell of spring, that the real amount of time that actually embodies that is a handful of days in each of those seasons. Usually spring is windy, cold, wet, muddy, and fall is either still hot from the summer or suddenly it turns cold. Listen to us. We're kvetching. It's crazy.
Yes. I hate breathing, don't you?
Boy, you know what I'm trying to get used to is figuring out what the hell's going on in the world besides these topics that we're talking about that we weren't talking about earlier in 2020. I'm constantly fascinated with how we... And when I say we, I mean you, me, and everybody listening. What do we have in common? We're all interested in current events, and we're all interested in politics and news. People would be listening to us right now to this radio station if they weren't interested in that, and you and I are doing it. So we, you, me, and everybody listening, we all have this common interest in journalism, in news, in debate, in discussion, public policy, politics, etc. What is it that makes something important? Goes back to what you said at the beginning of the show. We talk about important things. We talk about anything. You know, we race relations were low, was low on the top 20, you know, hanging around 10, 15. If I remember earlier this year, the existential issue, Greta Thunberg, is climate change. Climate change is going to destroy us. We don't talk about that anymore. Remember Greta at the UN? How dare you steal my future, you old... You know, I'm not going to say.
Yeah.
That's not happening. The economy's roaring. You know, we consider minor drops in things or changes in the Dow or the unemployment is major. And we're miles from that now. And
well, I think
I'm
you've just provided a unique perspective on what politics is all about. It's the fight. If you imagine the world with 6 or 8 billion, however many people we have. people who've all got an axe to grind on a certain subject,
right,
fighting for the right of their subject to rise to the level they've always thought it deserved. And
yep.
And there's kind of a roulette wheel of these things spinning around all the time. We're talking
yep.
to Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. Talkers.com is his website. We'll get a news update, and we will do another half hour of this big fun on WTIC. This song, Michael Harrison mentioned a few minutes ago, the cliche song of hot weather, which is number one on my list of songs that should never be played on the radio again. And there it is.
What?
Right here.
What do you mean, number one on your list of songs that should never be played on the radio again? That's one of the songs that should be played constantly on the radio.
It is. That's why I don't want to hear it anymore. As
it
soon
is?
As there's a warm
Where?
Day.
Who's playing it anymore?
I don't know. I haven't listened to the radio in 30 or 40 years. But last time I listened, every time there was warm weather, the whatever music station it would fit on the format, they had to play it. Don't they still do topical songs, rainy songs on rainy days and all that?
I don't know whether there's any thought whatsoever to music radio. I think it's computerized and it just falls the way it will by categories that have nothing to do with.
Yeah, but the computer probably has there's probably a sensor, a weather detector that gets fed into the computer that alters its selection of songs.
Well, do you want, if you're driving in your car and it's raining and you're listening to a classic rock station, do you want to hear Riders on the Storm by The Doors because it starts with rain?
In other words, that's stupid.
Does that stuff mean anything to you? Do you go, oh, they know the kind of environment I'm in. They're playing a song about rain. Or they're playing
a song
about heat.
No, it makes me think they think I'm a moron. And the only way I can relate to the fact that it's 85 degrees and humid is I have to hear Hot Town Summer in the City.
Yeah, I just happen to love that song.
It's a great song.
Which gets
ruined in my mind by overplay.
Well, overplay will ruin anything. I mean, some of the best songs in the world, being an old DJ, I just still can't listen to them unless I'm turning somebody on to them. Raising my son gave me an opportunity to re-listen to a lot of the music I grew up with.
Because you had to share it with him, you mean?
Yes. Yes, when you teach a child something that you have a lot of experience with, it gives you fresh eyes and fresh ears in terms of appreciating it. And I found that to be the case with my musical background. The poor kid, I mean, he was constantly...
Zero interest, right?
No, he actually had a tremendous interest. He might even be listening right now, so he's probably blushing. But I remember when he was about 2 years old, I had this video of the history of the Beatles. It was this big collection of like two or three videos. It was on the big VHS and the history of the Beatles. And I played it for him. And I think the whole thing was like a 2 hour presentation. And I think we made it through 2 or 3 minutes before he was completely disinterested. 1 year later, did the same thing. Maybe he made 5 minutes before he was completely disinterested. Then I did it again when he was five, and I did it when he was six. And every year that I pulled this thing out and played it for him, he would make it a little bit further, a little bit further, until finally, when he was about 12 or 13 years old, he watched the whole thing and was sorry when it was over and came to me and said, Dad, can I have a guitar?
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's a moment that I'll always remember. A lot of it has to do with teaching people things and, you know, re-examining it yourself as a teacher. I mean, how about people that are teachers and professors who do the same lesson over and over again? New class, new kids. You know, how do they feel about telling the story of the Civil War or the Crusades or whatever?
Well, wait a second. It depends on what you mean when you say the same thing over and over again. If you love your topic, it should be a new presentation all the time, and you should be coming in fresh and you starting in a different place and sharing new ideas and new thoughts that you've generated. But boy, you just reminded me of a 10th grade American civics teacher who would, the first day of class, she walked in looking all droopy, threw her manila folder down on the table, opened it up, and said, "So," and she just started off with clearly the same lesson that she would do every year on the first day. It was miserably tedious and agonizing to sit through from day one till the end.
Didn't you and I once talk about how boring school was for us?
Yeah, well, we haven't done it, I don't think, in a week. But we did have a big we did have a big conversation once on it, because we found that we both had the same experience, that going to school was the most miserable thing in my life for the, you know, the 15 years that it went on. And it just, I find it so offensive that it's
why
so
was that
bad.
The case? Because I've been thinking about that conversation, and a number of people who listened to us said they really identified with it. What was it? Well, first of all, education should never be boring. It just shouldn't be. Any more than a radio show should be boring. As a matter of fact, I think teaching a class should be similar in terms of lesson plan, putting it together, trying to engage, trying to communicate, trying to stimulate, and to, of course, get attention. I think it should be done the same way you put together a radio show or any kind of a production or presentation. The teacher has to be, in a way, a talent, has to be an entertainer. And I don't mean, you know, yucking it up. I mean
song and dance. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, being, I guess the word, the modern word, it really is a good word, is engagement. You have to be engaging. And engaging means grabbing somebody and going, "You will listen to me and you will be fascinated." You know, as opposed to, "Well, back in 1822, you know, it's just a thing. So why you and I so bored? Was it the teacher's fault? Was it were we lazy? What's the problem with that? How did that happen, that so many years you and I spent sitting watching the clock?
Wasting. Wasting time. It kills me now that I wasted so much time, but I was so offended by everything that went on in the school, how dumb it was, how dumb the lessons were, how dumb some of the teachers were, I had a second grade teacher just ruined me to education. She was a first year teacher. And she didn't know how to manage a classroom, and there was just a din all day, every day, and nothing, no chance to learn, and I just shut off to the whole thing at that point. And this is why I feel really strongly about education systems, that they should be market systems and should be filled with the vibrance that you describe. And I don't think you can have an organization filled with excited, vibrant people in a huge bureaucracy. I think you have to have a strong individual leader who requires that everybody coming into their organization be that type of person. And I think the type of person you're talking about, if I can just package all my thoughts up into one rant here and then you can respond, I think what you're talking about is the difference between living life as an artist or as a normal person, whatever the opposite of artist is, that I think being an artist isn't about that you put paint on a canvas, because I know lots of artists and I've seen the results of lots of artists who aren't artists. They aren't creative people. They aren't figuring out new interpretations of life and new ways of doing things all the time. They want to find one way they can get good at, and then they want to pound out 1,000 of them like they're some kind of printing press. Mm. And to be a good educator, I think you have to care about people and love the process of seeing them explode with the excitement of new ideas and new discoveries.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say here now, because I know that all around the area, people listening, there are a number of people who are gritting their teeth and going, "How could he paint all of us teachers with this kind of a brush?" And that is wrong. There are teachers that are tremendously inspirational, and there are teachers that really care and are fascinating. And out of complete honesty, I have to say I have had some of those. So my complaint is, I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I'm thinking about our conversation last week when we talked, or two, the last 2 weeks, when we talked about education and we talked about the question of what really makes a person smart. Remember we were talking about that? How do you measure smartness? What does that really mean? What does intelligence mean in a world where the tools are constantly changing? And I do want to say that even though I was bored to tears through most of my days in factory schools, there were some teachers, and I remember them well, who were different. And I looked forward to their classes, and I respected them and felt good about them, and I wanted them to think I did well. In other words, I wanted to impress them by learning what they said and by doing well in tests and performing well in class. So I guess there are exceptions. So everybody out there, because you know you get the calls going, how could you say that about us? I'm not that way. And out of fairness, that's the truth. There are some really good, dedicated teachers.
Oh, absolutely. And I have this problem all the time because I'm always looking at systems, because I think systems are the failure, and that we have systems that are stolen by bureaucrats or politicians for political gain without regard for what they're doing to the system that makes it worse and that hurts people. So anybody, in my mind, who's arguing for one-size-fits-all government-run schools, public education, whether they know it or not, they're arguing for something that is harmful to children, because it's hard to innovate, it's hard to adjust, it's hard to make sure that the bad teachers are pushed out, just like in the police departments because of the rigging of the system by the unions. So that's what I'm looking at. I have all the respect in the world for anybody. I did it for 3 months. I was a long-term substitute teacher in the Cambridge Public Schools in Massachusetts, and I was doing a middle school social studies class for a teacher who was trying to squeeze his last couple of years out so he could maximize his pension, and the principal of the school convinced him to take a sick leave for the long term, because she just wanted him out of the classroom so bad. He was such a destructive force in terms of what was going on in the school. And then I walked into that situation. I realized what a hard thing. I wasn't a good teacher. I wanted desperately to be a good teacher. But you have to know a lot and have a ton of skills. Teachers are incredible what they can do.
How long ago did you do that?
It was like 2004, maybe 2005. It was, 15 to 17 years ago.
And what kind of a school was it? Was it a public
school?
It was
a middle school. It was in the super affluent city of Cambridge, nestled along the Charles River, housing Harvard and MIT both, which has very segregated schools. It's got great schools for the many affluent white people who live there, and it's got schools where it puts the poor minority kids. And I was in the Martin Luther King School, which was one where they shoveled off the kids they did not know what to do with. And it was a remarkable eye-opening experience.
Do you have credentials to do that?
No. I was just a long-term sub, so I didn't need any.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm completely unqualified for everything I do.
Well, you do a pretty good job. You really are good.
I just go in and start talking.
Wow. You really have done very well for somebody that doesn't have any talent or credentials. I think that's amazing.
That's the beauty of America.
I taught for as a student teacher when I was I actually was an education major. And I had to go through student teaching. The kids that I taught did not know that I also had a secret life as a rock and roll DJ. And it was sort of in an accompanying area. It was a next door town. So it was out of the signal of a small station that I was Mr. Hip. And it was the strangest thing going to it was a high school in Queens, New York. And I was assigned a class that I 11th grade English. And the teacher I had, the person who was in charge of me, not mentioning names, was considered all across New York City as a terror. He was the right-hand man of the union leader, the teacher's, Albert Shanker's right-hand man. I don't know if you remember that name from the past, a big-time education union leader. And this guy said to me, Michael, you're going to learn under fire. This class is yours for the semester. I'm never going to be here. I'm going to just come by once in a while.
Good luck.
And I was a teacher.
Just like that. He just handed it off to you. Here's the key.
He said, trial by fire.
Best of luck to you, kid.
I was in my senior year of college, which means I was 4 years from having been a high school kid myself, maybe 5 years. That is so intimidating when you walk into the school and you've never been a teacher, you've only been a student, and it's a school that wasn't that different than my high school. It was in an area, in terms of breakdown, it was a middle-class area, Queens, I'd say maybe 40% African-American, 60% white. I did it.
So that's what you did during the day when you were playing rock and roll music at night?
For several months, yeah. For the good part of a semester, I was teaching. I was teaching in the mornings. I had one class that was mine. Then I went back to the school where I was a student, and then I was on the radio at night. I worked
what
long
fun.
Days.
You had a great life. Hang on, Michael. We'll get our last break in. We'll continue the conversation. Michael Harrison is here because it's Friday on WTIC. Oh, yes. Michael Harrison is here. We're talking and enjoying. You know, do you mind if I change our direction again?
I was just going to change our direction if you didn't, so go ahead.
Oh, well, you go. You go.
Well, I want to see what I'm going to miss out on, so tell me what you're going to talk about, and if I like it, I'll say we'll do it. Otherwise, I got something for you.
I just got this flash because of the Allman Brothers. I was thinking about that I listened to an Allman Brothers album the other day that I probably have not listened to since college, that I listened to all the time when I was in high school, Eat a Peach. And I stopped, you know, my albums got stolen in college, and I never really became a collector again, where I had my own music. I just listened to the radio and didn't spend a lot of time listening to music. And since the smart speaker thing came along, I have a whole new attitude because it's all right there in the cloud, and I can just say, Alexa, play. Oh, I can't.
Don't do it now, otherwise Martin will start. But did you listen to? Did you play Blue Sky from the Eat a Peach album?
She just started saying she's going to play Hall and Oates.
No, I don't know. We don't want to hear Hall and Oates. We want to hear the Allman Brothers.
Alexa, stop. All right, there we go.
You have to use a fake name
when you're talking about her.
Eat a Peach was a great album. Did you play Blue Sky?
Yeah.
That's a great song.
I played
song.
The whole album. I told the woman who will remain nameless, please play Eat a Peach.
Okay.
And she did. And I listened to the whole thing. It was so much fun. I was just curious what you do. If you still have 1,000 albums
I have records that were played on legendary stations that have the markings of the program department, what you can play and not play. I have so much garbage in my basement. It's embarrassing. Some of them are warped.
Oh.
I'm waiting for them to come back, and then I could sell them. But right now, they go for about 3 cents each, so it's just not.
I want to come over someday and go have you show me some stuff. I want to see that.
Definitely. I have good stuff. So how much time do we have? We don't have any time, do we? Next week, I'll ask you the question.
We have a minute.
Okay, I would ask you.
You're going to write it down, save it, or
I'm going to say it right now. I'm going to give you a quick 10 seconds to answer. I'm going to ask it in 10 seconds. Donald Trump calls you up when we get off the air today, and he says, "Todd, should I go through with this Tulsa thing? Should I move it? Should I move it to another place? Postpone it or cancel it?" What would you tell him?
What a great question! I think we'll do that as a topic after the 4 o'clock news. I would tell him to delay it, move it.
Okay, it's a good question, isn't it? Oh,
that's
I would tell him definitely
question.
Delay it. I would tell him forget about it. Don't even talk about it. But no, he's hell bent on doing this, and it's going to be very interesting to watch it. It's going to be like as big as a Super Bowl, just and not because you know it's a rally. It's because there's so much attached to it. Is he going to step in it, or is he going to come out looking good? It's going to
well,
be
is that,
interesting.
Are you worried about what he'll say, or are you worried about the health thing?
I'm worried about the health thing.
Don't do it.
Worried about the health thing. I'm definitely worried about the health thing. I'm interested in the whole race relations thing. There's that component. And then there's the component of what he says and what the crowd is like, considering the sensitivity of the public right now. Trump might be very out of step with the mood of the public.
That's my concern, is that he's lost the rhythm of what's going on right now. All right, Michael Harrison, great way to finish us off. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, everybody.
We'll see you next week. All right. And don't forget the Michael Harrison Wrap coming up tomorrow at, I forget what time, 2 o'clock, maybe, on WTIC.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.